Good morning, everyone. Welcome back once again to Jays Talk Plus here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also on Sportsnet 360 if you're watching on television. Thank you for joining us. Hope you had a good week. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you one more time, Jules. The last Jays Talk Plus for us of the All-Star break. Blake Murphy will be back on Monday. That's very exciting. I hope Blake had a restful break. But as for you and I, it does mean, I guess we're on the Blue Jays pregame show tomorrow. I believe we are doing that tomorrow. So it's not like I'm going to have to wait too long to actually see you again.
We won't miss each other for too long.
No, it's like less than a full day, essentially, since the pregame show tomorrow at the Rogers Center. But saying that does give me some excitement because there has been no baseball, no live baseball for the past couple of days. And it's funny, like, I do like the All-Star break. I appreciate getting this some time off. It's fun to watch a derby. It's fun to watch the All-Star game. There are no games for the past couple of days, but it's also nice to have some baseball back. The baseball returns today, essentially.
It really is. It's funny, right, Joe? Because when the first half is kind of done, the Blue Jays played 96 games in the quote-unquote first half, and then you're so ready for a break. It's such a grind, right? And then when it comes, you're like, okay, this is awesome. We're just going to have some fun. We're going to catch up on our reading or whatever it is that people do on breaks. And then you're so ready for it to be back. Then the second half starts and the grind starts. And then you remember why you loved that break so much. By the time the World Series wraps up, you say, I'm so ready for this offseason.
Oh, I know.
And come February, here we are again, just clamoring for spring training. It's a flat circle, as you like to say.
It's a good point you bring up. It's true. Time is a flat circle. It's true, even more so these days. But it's a good point because as soon as the World Series is over, like the final out of the World Series takes place, whoever is crowned champion, it's a lot of fun. I often find myself like later that night thinking, gosh, I wish I could watch some baseball. Like I wish I could go watch it. And I mean, like, you know, in the fall, there are other things to watch. Like, by the time you get to the World Series is usually happening at a time where, and a lot of people say this is the best time of the sports calendar, right? Like the NFL has returned. It's well into the season at that point. Of course, here in Canada, the NHL has returned. The NBA will have been starting already as well. And like, regardless of the various quality of your favorite sports team in any of those leagues, it is nice that the World Series is going on at the same time as essentially all three or all four major sports in North America. So it's not like you don't have anything to watch, but I think there is like a very easy quality to watching. Yeah, like that is a big part of baseball. For me, at least, right?
Like homey, right?
It's a familiar feeling about it that I don't get when I do watch all of the other sports, which I also, funnily enough, love a lot. Like, it's not that I dislike any of those sports. I love watching basketball and hockey and football. It's just baseball occupies a special spot.
Or you can just admit that you miss working with me.
That's true.
That's
too.
Also something that's that you true. Can just say.
Well, you're not going to be rid of me so easily. We will be doing some Jays Talk classics, let's call it, throughout the season and certainly the pregame show as well. But tonight, you can watch the Blue Jays Tigers game on Apple TV Plus, so it's not going to be on Sportsnet tonight, but if you do choose to join us on the radio, Ben Shulman and Ben Nicholson-Smith have the radio call, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Blair and Barker, who also returned today, the guys will be back on these very chairs in a couple of hours. Blair and Barker will have Jays Talk Classic after the game as well. But joining us right now on the line, very excited for this conversation, Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja himself, joins us here on Jays Talk Plus. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about y'all?
We are doing wonderful. Thank you for doing this for us and carving out some time. You know, we were just talking about the baseball and where it stands in the sports landscape, I suppose, Rob. And it's funny, I have long admired your work for Pitching Ninja because I find baseball media these days, like baseball in the sports landscape, I think over the three of our lifetimes has like ceded some ground to the NFL and to the NBA and so on. But when you try and grow the game in non-traditional ways outside of like legacy media, it's hard. And you have succeeded in a vastly amazing way. It's so much fun to watch. I got to say, Rob, one of my favorite things that I always mention on the postgame shows is, I guess it's like the overlays, like to see where pitches come out of guys' hands. I think that's one of my favorite things you do, and I think you have contributed to like the growth of baseball for a lot of casual and hardcore fans alike in a really fun way.
Well, I appreciate that. I've had people say that I'm actually a hitting account because I show how hard hitting is and nobody yells at hitters anymore.
That's really funny. You know, it's true. No one does, right? Like, you only ever see guys yelling at pitchers and the umps and so on. It's true. I do want to get your general thoughts before we get your take on some Blue Jays pitchers. I do want to get your thoughts on pitching being where it is in Major League Baseball these days, right? Because it feels like in the last couple of years, even if you only narrow it to the last five seasons or so, it kind of feels like pitchers have become almost unhittable. You've got arms are doing things they probably are not meant to do naturally, like their elbows and forearms are moving in ways that the human body probably has never been meant to do. I'm curious what you've thought about the continued growth of how pitchers have become so good, relievers throwing 100+, starters making the ball spin in a variety of ways. I'm curious what you think when you see modern pitchers as opposed to guys we would have seen when we were younger.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, here's a great example. I was talking to Chris Sale at the All-Star game, and Chris Sale is as old school a pitcher as you could ever find, right? Like, you would not expect him to be a new school guy. And he told me when he was with the Braves, they changed his changeup. He was taught to cut it to get seam-shifted wake on his changeup and make it move better to make hitters, you know, fail more. And to me, that just sums it all up. Like, we can design pitches today almost like a laboratory and just have designer pitchers for different pitchers. Stuff that you wouldn't have seen back in the day. Back in the day, you would have had to luck into these pitch grips. And now we actually know what the ball is going to do aerodynamically. We can simulate it. We can look at metrics. We can slow it down. We can copy other people's movements. So it is like the heyday for pitching. And it really means, you know, it's tough to be a hitter nowadays.
Rob, speaking of, thanks for doing this, by the way. Speaking of maybe designing pitches or, you know, trying to figure out what a guy has and how it plays in the league and whatnot, a guy that is kind of fascinating to us, especially here in Toronto, is Yariel Rodriguez, right? The guy that comes from Cuba, then goes to Japan, and yeah, you can really see that in his mechanics and his delivery. What are maybe some of the challenges or some of the excitements or the possibilities of working with a guy like that, bringing him into North America for the first time? And what have you made of what you've seen from Yariel Rodriguez so far?
Well, what I've seen from him is his willingness to adapt and just improve, because it's one of those things that you come over and you got to get used to hitters. You can pitch in all different leagues, but facing major league hitters is a different animal. And as a pitching analyst, you can retrain a guy. So I love having the raw materials. To me, it's all about raw materials, and he's got a lot of that. And then it's about honing it in to attack the hitters that he's going to be facing versus the hitters he has faced. But a lot of it is you develop confidence by pitching in these other various other leagues, and then you can bring it to MLB, but it's still an adjustment period. And I think he's made that adjustment, and you've seen it in the past few starts. He's looked really good.
Rob, how do you know, and we've had this conversation about Yariel Rodriguez a lot, and he's not the only guy, certainly, but how do you know when a guy is ready to be a starter versus a reliever? Because I think we're still having that conversation about Yariel Rodriguez in Toronto. I think there's a lot of hope that he will be a starter long-term, but, you know, pitch count-wise, probably still getting stretched out to go a little bit longer. Like Julia said, I mean, this is not a guy who's pitched in Major League Baseball prior to this season. So, there probably is no strong line of delineation to say, okay, this is when he's a starter, this is when he's a reliever. But I'm curious for you if you see that in different guys and you can make that determination.
Sometimes you do. Like back in the day, it used to be a failed starter ended up being in the bullpen, right, and they were a reliever. Now you've got some of the best arms in baseball, maybe the best arms in baseball in the bullpen. So a lot of it has to do with endurance, pitch arsenal, whole bunch of things, mentality. So some guys love pitching every day. Like they have a bad outing and they want to get back out there. And other guys thrive more with rests and being able to plan everything out. You know, the Chris Bassetts of the world who has to, yeah, has a million different pitches, wants to use them all in the right spot and loves scouting reports and stuff and thinking about the game versus guys that just want to go out there. So it really, there's so many different metrics. And then it's just what the team needs too.
Yeah, like Jeff Passan had an article for ESPN maybe about a month ago or so, maybe a little bit more, but he was talking about the journey for a variety of pitchers like Atlanta's Reynaldo Lopez, for certainly Garrett Crochet, Jordan Hicks pitched for the Blue Jays last season, and this guy throws gas, and then he actually, I thought it was really interesting to see how he's highlighted, Hicks takes some velo off his fastball, which you don't often see most pitchers want to throw as hard as humanly possible. He takes some couple miles an hour off that fastball, which has allowed him to seemingly corral it a little more. I find that stuff so fascinating because I don't think those are the kinds of conversations we would have had if we were doing this, I don't know, like 10, 15 years ago, maybe even less, honestly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had a great conversation with Reynaldo Lopez, for example, and he told me that relieving helped him start. Like he was starter,
right?
Really good reliever. I thought when he came to Atlanta, he was going to be a big bullpen piece. And instead they put him as a starter. And I said, what was the big difference? And he said, actually being successful in the bullpen told me to take every inning at a time versus a whole start. So he pitches every inning like he's in the bullpen, and it's just helped him focus. So again, everybody's kind of different that way. I am surprised by Hicks he's taking like 8 miles an hour off his fastball. It's amazing. I'm still waiting for him to uncork 104 at some point.
It's funny, Rob, because we speak about Chris Bassett in this city quite a bit. And the fact that he doesn't throw very hard, right? It's really all about the variety of pitches and the deception that brings. And it helps, of course, that he has such a high baseball IQ and he can, mix and match in different ways here. But what do you see maybe is the, what are the factors for Chris Bassett's continued success, even though this is a league that now values velocity so much? And what is it that he's doing right and has been doing right for so long here?
So everybody's different. So what he is I view him more like a painter. And as a painter, he needs all the different colors on his palette to be able to put the exact right color in the exact right spot. That's what he does. It's basically an art form to Chris. And so he has a million different pitches, uses the exact right one at the right spot. Now, if he's off, sometimes it might get hammered. But he is that type of pitcher, and he relies on location, varying everything, deception, arm slot, whole bunch of different things. And that's why he's been successful. It's one of those things that it's easier to scout velocity. That's why you're seeing a lot of it. When number one, it's successful, it's harder to hit as the ball's coming in faster. But as a scout, you're not going to be wrong if you say the radar gun, he's 101. If you say a guy's 93, it's your reputation on the line if you say he can pitch. Because if he doesn't pitch, then it's your judgment. Otherwise, you're looking at the gun and, then it's the guy's fault at that point. So it's really it's a little crutch for scouts.
It's funny, as we discuss Bassett, one of the conversations I find really interesting about Bassett is he has seemingly in the last couple of years, and I guess all pitchers have had to do this, Jules, but he seemingly weaponized the use of not only PitchCom, because he calls his own pitches with the device on his belt, but he also seems to really toy with the pitch clock, which of course is something new in the last couple of years. And I find Bassett's usage of the pitch clock really interesting because, he gets the odd pitch clock violation, and he shows his displeasure with that on the mound, probably more viscerally than most. But I do find it interesting when he goes into the windup as late as humanly possible, lets that ball go as late as possible. And when you ask him about it after games, he often says he does it on purpose because he feels it messes with the batter, messes with their mechanics. And it's something to really see him sneak in a fastball, a 92 mile an hour fastball, which is fast for him, at the bottom of the zone, and then throw like a 69 mile an hour curveball that just drops in like a hammer. Like those kinds of things are so much fun to watch from Bassett in particular, because there are not a lot of pitchers who are able to do that, especially, and I guess pitchers kind of have to in some ways learn, Rob, to do that more as they get a little older.
Yeah, Bassett is a gamesman. Like he loves competition. That is what he's about. So for him, the pitch clock is just another weapon. He's got all these pitches, and then he also has different arm slots, but also uses the pitch clock as a weapon. I talked to him about this before, like right when the pitch clock was being implemented. He's like, I have so many ways I'm going to use the pitch clock to my advantage. This is going to really hurt hitters. And it's just, I love watching that dude think. He's one of those guys that's kind of old school in a lot of ways. He's a pure competitor, And he will use absolutely everything to his advantage. You see it on his face sometimes, too. He's very expressive.
Rob, moving from yin to yang, and speaking of being expressive, Kevin Gausman is a guy that was a Cy Young contender last year, and we all know why. It's because of the splitter. Yep. It was so deceptive. You had managers like Dusty Baker coming in here and saying, well, how do you lay off the split? I don't know. If you know, well, then tell me, because we're trying. And this year, the splitter has just not been where it was in years past. He's also been very, very honest about that. There was talk about changing mechanics in season, which is something that obviously pitchers are not trying to do. But what have you seen from that pitch specifically from Gausman? And what is it that maybe is preventing him from finding that more consistent success that we've saw in past years?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because if I knew the answer, I would text him right now and tell him it could be a variety of different things. So his splitter is one of the most complicated pitches to throw generally. He described his splitter to me, and it was the longest anybody's ever described a pitch grip to me. It took 20 minutes to talk to, like, he doesn't throw it in bullpens because he develops blisters. He'll only throw in the game, but if he gets a blister in the game, it means it's going to be really good. And it's a very unique grip. He has to release it the exact right way. So if something goes wrong, it's kind of hard to get that feel back, but I don't even know if it's a feel thing, because he's kind of been out of whack all season. Like, just isn't the Kevin Gausman I'm used to seeing. There's flashes of it, but, you know, struggling with velo up and down, that has something to do with it, because you have to throw that pitch hard to get the right movement. I know he's tinkering with his mechanics. He should be able to find it because he's a professional and a great pitcher and been doing it forever, but hopefully over the break, he maybe thought about it some and worked it out and compared his mechanics to previous years. You know, it's just one of those things. Sometimes it can leave you and then come back all of a sudden. It wouldn't surprise me if he hits the ground running, though, after the All-Star break.
Yeah, the splitter for Gausman has been really interesting to watch, because sometimes it's not splitting enough and sometimes it's splitting too much and it's carrying the zone a little bit more, which you don't want as well. So it's really interesting to watch how he has used it in relation to his fastball. And, you know, Rob, if we're talking about the great Blue Jay pitches of individual pitches that the starting rotation throws in 2024, I would say if Gausman's splitter is really high up there, I would say Berríos' slurve is pretty high up there as well. That thing is nasty. Like, whenever it's on, it's moving all over the zone. The run on it is like double digit inches. It's crazy how much it moves out there. And yet this season in particular, it's almost, he still throws it a ton, but it seems like he has backed off using it as often as we've seen it, and maybe even if you just look back to 2023, because it seems like it's not maybe moving as much as he would like. For example, he seems to have relied a little bit more on the sinker. And I wonder, I mean, that, like Julia said, you don't always be making adjustments in season, but I think in Berríos' case, he might not have any choice, because that is a pitch he relies on so heavily.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Attacking east to west is a big thing for him, and he does it so well. So he's able to get chases off the plate with that slurve and then run stuff back with his sinker. So you tunnel those two pitches. And as a hitter, if you take it, it may end up being a two seamer that catches the zone. Otherwise a slurve, you swing at it and you're looking stupid. So that's when he's at his best. And I've known, I mean, it's another pitch that comes and goes, and throughout his career, it's come and gone, because right, he is spectacular when he's on. When he's on, he gets more movement, like visually. You see it and you're like, how does anybody hit this guy? And then he goes into slumps where he's not able to do it. And he's got little complex mechanics. Maybe it hurts him with repeatability. But at the top of his game, you know, double-digit strikeout game should be nothing to him. Like, he is wicked at the top of his game.
He certainly was at the top of his game to start the season, right, Rob? We saw just how good he was, and the ERA was insane, even though the field independent pitching was not necessarily great. But then the conversation becomes, well, he's being helped by his defense, he's running into a bit of good luck, he's getting hit hard, and all of that, right? But when you were watching Berríos early on, was that your impression as well, or did you see something maybe a little more sustainable than the pessimistic side of this fan base?
I mean, to be honest, I am very, when I look at a pitcher, I look at a lot of things like FIP and expected stats, because there is a degree of luck. over short periods of time, even longer periods of time, there's some degree of luck. I like my guys with high strikeouts. You know, it's just one of those things. I have a bias towards it because I think that's more repeatable and tends to reflect success in future years. With him, yeah, like that, you can regress if you're not dominating hitters. He does have that stuff though. Like objectively, if he goes out there, are you ever going to say he's not going to strike out 10 today? Like he can on any given day, and then he'll have a 1K game every once in a while too, allowing balls in play. Then you're at the mercy of everything. So, you know, I'd rather there be no balls.
So, Rob, the second half of the season gets going today, which is exciting. Baseball finally returns after a couple days off. I know I say finally. It's not like it's been gone for months. It's only been a couple days, but it is nice that the season gets going again tonight. And for the Blue Jays, in this series against the Tigers, we're going to get Kikuchi going in this series, and Jack Flaherty actually pitches tonight for the Tigers. And these are both guys that in less than 2 weeks could be on different teams, which I find really interesting. When you look at the available market for starting pitchers at the deadline, which goes, again, on July 30th, which is, again, less than 2 weeks, which is kind of wild to say even out loud, but who do you think gets moved? I mean, I know I mentioned Garrett Crochet earlier. There are a lot of talks linking him to the Dodgers, and I'm sure a lot of teams are in on someone like Garrett Crochet. Flaherty, Kikuchi, will the Rays trade a Zach Eflin, for example? We already saw Aaron Civale get traded. I'm curious, when you look at the deadline, when it comes in the market for starters specifically, what you see?
I mean, to me, Kikuchi is going to be a very valuable piece to somebody. And I do think he gets moved because he's worth a ton to any contender. He can be spectacular at times as well, and he's shoving. So I like that. I mean, you know, Kershaw is worth his weight in gold right now. So I don't know if somebody's going to give up. You're going to have to mortgage your future to get him, but he's worth it. Like he is, you know, at times top five pitcher in baseball. Like he's really nasty. So, I mean, I think there's a huge market to me. Starters, you know, again, they're worth their weight in gold, and you're talking about some big guys, but if I'm the Blue Jays, I absolutely look at shopping Kikuchi because I think you can get a big return for him. And, you know, now's the time to do it.
Yeah. I mean, if Aroldis Chapman in 2023 can fetch the Royals, someone like Cole Reagans, right? I mean, I feel like you probably feel okay about what you get back for someone like Yusei Kikuchi. Rob, we appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much. You're the man. I adore the Pitching Ninja work. Keep it up the great work, and hopefully we can do this down the road.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
There he goes. Rob Friedman, the Pitching Ninja, at Pitching Ninja is where you can find all of his great content. I mentioned the overlays, Jules. I think I actually brought this up with you on Jays Talk over the years, but I love that stuff because, I wasn't just blowing smoke when I said this to Rob at the beginning, but I really do think it is difficult. So our conversation about like us loving baseball at the very beginning of the show, I do think it's difficult for retention of casual eyeballs of this sport in particular, right? Over our lives, I want to say, you know, basketball is taking a bit more step forward in terms of global popularity. The NFL, I think, if you're talking about like America's pastime, I would say it's probably the NFL these days, and probably not baseball. Like the NFL is a ludicrously popular league. But I think that's why over the years you saw the pitch clock come in, and you saw bigger bases and less disengagements. They're trying to like make it a little easier to watch as a sport, and hardcore fans might not like that kind of stuff. But I do think it's when it comes to the efforts of everyone to grow the game, I think things like, I mean, John Boy, I think, does a fun job of it. When it comes to the lip reading, I think that's pretty fun. Certainly, Rob with Pitching Ninja as well, when you can see how talented these guys are. So that's why I do love having conversations with people like Rob, because you don't get to have those conversations very often.
And it's so important, Sho. It is so important to, you know, if we are serious about growing this game, if we are serious about bringing in new fan bases or in retaining young fan bases and things like that, then the work that guys like Rob do, it becomes even more important. It's independent work.
Yeah.
He is so knowledgeable, and, you know, he has the skills to put something together that, it will grab the eyes of even someone who is not necessarily super data driven.
Sure.
Or, right? There's a lot of that in baseball. But when you can turn that into something that is visually appealing, then all of a sudden, you know, I'm going to, all things considered, and to be fully transparent, I'm not a huge numbers gal,
sure,
right? You have to be in order to work in baseball, but I'm not doing deep dives like the Chris Blacks of the world. I'm not doing that, right? Yeah. But this is obviously an account and a piece of work that for me makes it not only interesting, but also helpful and engaging at that. So 100% I agree with you. I think that the independent content creation that we're seeing in baseball right now is crucial for the development of the sport.
Yeah, I think it's a lot, and it's just fun to watch is what it is, right? Like I enjoy watching it. And maybe I think Pitching Ninja, the content that Rob creates today, I think finds a place because pitchers have never been better, right? Like, it's not like you're not watching guys getting lit up all the time. Like, we're watching the best athletes on the face of the planet come in and do absolutely nasty things. And it's for guys even that you might not be super familiar with. Like, how many guys do you think, really, Julia, that like, we're super familiar, like casual fans, we're super familiar with Yariel Rodriguez before he threw a pitch in Major League Baseball? Probably none. Even I wasn't that familiar with him. I saw him pitch for like one inning at the World Baseball Classic, and that was like almost, what, 2 years ago or 1.5 years ago or whatever it was. It felt like a really long time. How many people were watching Yoshinobu Yamamoto before he got like a bazillion dollars from the Dodgers? Or how many people were watching Shota Imanaga before he was signed by the Cubs? Like, probably not a lot, right? So I think being able to watch guys you probably wouldn't have had the opportunity to watch, or even the dominant arms in college, right? For example, how many guys are watching them? Again, probably not a lot. So I think that all of that, I think, is fun to watch because you get to see some really interesting highlights. You get to see the arm slot and how hitters often have no chance when they're standing down there at the plate. Honestly, if anything, I often feel Rob's work has highlighted that it's if a guy gets even one hit in a game, hey, great. Well done. Like, well done for you, because it's not easy to be a major league hitter these days.
No, seriously. I agree with you. And this is obviously, like you said, Joe, the pitchers have the advantage for sure. But this is a league of adjustments. So I also believe that the years ahead may have, you know, some more fun in store for those who like seeing hitters succeed in this league.
Hey, like you said, Pete Alonso said this the other day, but home runs are sick. So you do want to see that.
He has a point when he says that.
He does have a point. Let's take a quick break. We do appreciate Rob Friedman from Pitching Ninja joining us. On the other side, we'll be joined by someone to help us break down tonight's ball game. Ryan Spielborg, of course, former major leaguer and now Apple TV Plus analyst for Friday Night Baseball. He'll join us on the other side, and we'll catch up with him ahead of tonight's broadcast. Blue Jays taking on the Tigers at the Rogers Center as the second half begins. More Jays Talk Plus on the other side. You're watching on Sportsnet 360, listening to it on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Diving deep into the biggest stories in Toronto sports and the NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus of the Sportsnet Radio Network. Watching on Sportsnet 360. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you. Thanks for being with us. Second half starts today, Jules. If you want to listen to it on the radio, Ben Shulman, Ben Nicholson-Smith, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific is the... I guess it's just after 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, but we will join the vast Sportsnet Radio Network at that time. Blair and Barker will have Jays Talk Classic, and Blair and Barker will also be back for Blair and Barker later today. So you'll finally hear the dulcet tones of Jeff and Kevin after they got some well-deserved time off. The Apple TV broadcast goes tonight. It is not a Sportsnet game on television. It is for the rest of the week. But if you do want to watch it, Apple TV Plus Friday Night's Baseball is where you have to watch it. We'll connect with Ryan Spielborgs in a bit here, but they did actually release, Jules, I don't know if you saw this, because they kind of had, and I say they, the Blue Jays, they had to slightly rejig the first three starters. You know, we get the probable starters for most teams. So the Tigers had theirs put out, and we'll catch up with Jason Beck from MLB.com at the top of the next hour. We'll talk to him about the Tigers, of course. But the Jays starters, like it looked initially like Yariel Rodriguez was going to start today, right? And he was going to kick off the second half. But actually, they kind of sent out very quickly. All the Blue Jays beat writers sent this out. Keegan had sent it out. Shy had sent it out. BNS had sent it out. But they rejigged it to the point where Bassett is actually starting today. Yeah. Kikuchi goes tomorrow, Saturday. Gausman goes on Sunday. There's no game on Monday. It's a day off on Monday. So a quick break for the Blue Jays after the All-Star break. But on Tuesday, I guess they haven't said, but in theory, if you're lining it up in your mind, I would suppose that means Berríos goes on Tuesday and then Yariel Rodriguez goes on Wednesday, I would guess. But that's what we got to start. Bassett, Kikuchi, Gosman, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, it was funny how that happened,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And obviously, we know that a lot goes into these decisions. There's matchups. There is where a guy may be with his work in the break and all of that. And there are a lot of moving pieces to that decision, but it was interesting to see just the change. We don't get that very often, right?
No, yeah.
We don't get that type of move. Maybe, you know, something that comes to mind is Juan Soto being added to the lineup super super close to first pitch earlier this year here in Toronto. But, you know, the Blue Jays are going to play the matchups as much as they can here, especially with the series against the Rays coming up.
Yeah.
But there's so much that there is a lot that matters early on in this stretch here. If the Blue Jays are still, you know, looking to somewhat compete for whatever it may be this season, then that is what you're going to see. But I like Chris Bassett coming out of the break. I think that he's even like earned it at this point to be the first guy out. Obviously, we are going to keep a close eye on the Kikuchi start, right? From now until the deadline, he will be kind of under a microscope. That's not necessarily something that he has dealt with particularly well in the past. So we'll see how it sort of plays into his game or how it affects his pitching. But, you know, it's this first series against the Tigers to start, which is also a team that kind of finished the first half on a good note, having won 8 of their past 10. It's going to be interesting and it's going to be fun. And it's the start of a more defining process for how this season is going to go for both of these teams.
I think I agree with you on Bassett. I think Bassett, like, I mean, I said this yesterday when we were doing the first half awards, but I picked Bassett as the pitcher of the year,
right.
The pitcher of the year so far, I suppose, starting pitcher. And if that's the case, I think if you want to put your best foot forward with a guy who has been the two guys that have been the most consistent for the starters in the last couple of weeks, because they all kind of got off the funky starts to the year, I would say. Gosman in particular, because he kind of did not have a pretty normal spring training this year. Like, his first start of the spring was the last game of spring training.
Yeah.
So it kind of felt like the first three games of the actual season, his first three starts, I should say, did take him a little while to get fully into gear. And we have seen him pitch a lot better as of late, which is good, obviously. Like you were saying to Rob earlier, he's made those adjustments. Like, he's hunching over the mound a little more, which has changed his arm slot, which has allowed the fastball to remain effective and in the zone, because he was having some command issues. The velo in the last couple of starts for Gosman had looked okay. It wasn't actually an issue as it had been early in the season, but he's been locating better. The splitter has been carrying or breaking perhaps more like he wants to. But even knowing all of those things, I think it is the right move to kind of come out of the gate with essentially the guys that have been the two best starters for you all season in Bass and then Kikuchi, which is crazy because he might not be a Blue Jay after like three starts from now. He might be on a different team, right? Because like you said, he's going to pitch on Saturday. I guess that lines him up with the day off on Monday to pitch against probably the series opener against the Rangers, because the Jays have this 9-game homestand.
Yeah.
So they're playing the Tigers, Rays, Rangers before they head to, I think it's Baltimore. So it's interesting to see how they lined up the first three.
Yeah. And, you know, these are the moments to sort of play those matchups and make those adjustments show. I don't think it's going to matter so much for October, but we have seen the Blue Jays kind of use the All-Star break as a way to get that starting rotation a little bit more aligned with what they're going to see, not just now, but in a potential postseason series. And then, of course, this year, that's a bit of a steeper climb for them.
It starts tonight with Blue Jays Tigers. Chris Bassett, we mentioned, does pitch this evening against Jack Flaherty. You want to watch it? It'll be on Apple TV Plus's Friday Night Baseball. And on the call is Ryan Spielborgs, Apple TV Plus analyst for Friday Night Baseball. You can also hear him on SiriusXM MLB Network Radio. Loud Outs is the name of his program, and Ryan joins us right now. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. We appreciate you carving out some time for us. You wear a lot of hats, Ryan, actually. Like, you're a former major leaguer, you work for SiriusXM, you work for Apple TV Plus now. So actually, I'm very impressed and grateful that you took some time out for us this morning.
I usually wear one hat. it's a lasso whiskey hat from my buddies in Colorado. But yeah, no, it's fun. I love baseball. I never thought I'd ever get into broadcasting. I just wanted to be a baseball player. And baseball players don't really realize that there's you know, life outside of baseball once you're done. So this broadcasting thing just kind of was parlayed, not on purpose, not out of school, not out of want. It's just my happen chance, and I feel really fortunate that I get to still do baseball as part of a living.
Well, we will see you. We will hear you tonight on the Apple TV Plus Friday Night Baseball broadcast. You know, you and I are roughly the same age, so I am curious to get your take on the difference that we've seen over the course of our lifetimes and how baseball broadcasts have evolved. And I think Apple TV Plus has done something different. I mean, one of my favorite things they do is in between innings, you get like the raw feed of the field. Pardon me. You get to see like the umpires walking around and you hear some crowd noise. I quite like that stuff. The very crisp images. I'm curious when you look at the differences that Apple TV Plus's Friday Night Baseball is doing versus like, you know, quote unquote traditional broadcast, ESPN, Fox here in Canada, Sportsnet. I'm curious what you like based on your lifetime of watching baseball.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, first off, when I go back and I watch these games, you're right, the visual of these games are really impressive. I mean, the cameras, how they cut it, the lighting, it's a different look than other RSNs, and it's not to say that one way is better than the other, it's just different. I also think, you know, there's a couple cool things that Apple TV Plus does that's pretty neat. Like, let's say you really can't stand to hear my voice as your broadcaster, right? For tonight's game, you want to listen to your voice. You can click in the top right corner and listen to your radio feed. You can listen to your home radio feed. So if you're a Tigers fan or a Blue Jays fan, you don't have to listen to the national guys talk about your team. And so that's another feature that I think is pretty sweet. And then, like, any time that I'm watching a game, especially when it's somebody coming in from the outside, I like hearing the perspective, but like from where I come from, I always got frustrated if I heard, you know, like somebody mispronounced my player's name wrong, or not know that last week, you know, there was a 3-2 pitch that didn't go our way. You know, like I like to know that the broadcasters know that, and it's really almost impossible for anybody to watch every single game of every single team. And we do the best, and that's where, like, being on radio almost every single day, I do get the chance to be in it a lot more than most guys. I'm not tooting my own horn, but I'm just trying to stay as locked in as possible with every team, with every general manager, with all the players. And just taking a quick tour in the clubhouse is something, if there's any aspiring broadcasters out there, the easiest thing you could ever do is when you do get to the field, go around the clubhouse and just say hi to the guys, not meaning that you're going to interview them or anything, but just go say hi, check in, how was your break? You know, go find out how Justin Turner's kid's doing, go see how Danny Jansen's kid's doing, right? Like little itty-bitty things like that, and then they might give you a nugget that you could use it again.
Well, Ryan, we really appreciate the you know, the commitment to not only getting it right, but doing it in a way that fans can, you know, the hardcore fans can also enjoy it. I know how hard that must be with all of the prep that goes into, you know, covering one series or one team, let alone an entire season of different matchups here for you. And I want to say that we definitely want the national guys' perspective here. We're actually looking forward to hearing from you, maybe from the outside, what you have made of the Blue Jays season. This has obviously not gone according to plan. There's a ton of disappointment around the city right now, and rightfully so, but wondering, you know, what you have seen from the Blue Jays, especially in the first half, and if there were indications for you, maybe even before the season started, that this is how it would go. Because let me tell you, here we are all, we were all pretty surprised about how things shook up.
So I think from a couple things. When you're digging into the numbers, the overall numbers of the Blue Jays, I mean, it's not a playoff team. The numbers are showing it's not a playoff team. You are, it's a bottom third offensive group. You know, the Oakland A's have scored more runs than the Toronto Blue Jays. They're near the bottom in home runs hit. I thought this was going to be a team that was going to be a much better defensive unit. Their bottom third defensive efficiency. The bullpen was a disaster. I mean, there's And I, like, you feel bad for Eric Swanson, what he's had to deal with his son. But, like, it's just, it hasn't performed. Nothing has performed for the Blue Jays. And so, to your point, you know, could you look at the offseason and see it coming? I think it's on the...
Oh, Ryan, you know what? We'll get you back on the line in 2 seconds here. I think the Gremlins ate his connection there, Julia, but he's not wrong. He's not wrong in that you look at a lot of the underlying numbers, and I think a lot of Blue Jays fans, I don't think there's a single Blue Jays fan out there that would disagree with what Ryan's assessment of the team. But it is always interesting to get the assessment of people who maybe are not watching every single Blue Jays game like we have to. And still, he's a former major leaguer. He can see the issues, right? It's a little unfortunate because of what you wanted out of this team, but it does I think mean when it comes to pivoting here in the second half. I mean, if things don't turn, I mean, you know what? I take it back. It's not even if things don't turn. Regardless, I think things have to change. I would think.
Yeah. We know that this is now sort of a preparation for 2025 and correcting those mistakes. But I do think we have Ryan.
Yeah,
back.
Ryan. Thanks for rejoining us here. Sorry we lost you there. I appreciate you coming back on with us. We were just discussing your point about just the struggles, I suppose, the Blue Jays have faced. And I mean, you know, the deadline's approaching here. Do we see a major move, pivot off of a lot of the UFAs? I mean, you mentioned earlier Danny Jansen and Justin Turner. Like, there's a chance neither of those guys are Blue Jays in like less than 2 weeks here.
Yeah, I think so. That's kind of like the topic du jour is figuring out, okay, what can the Blue Jays move away from? If they are to dismantle this team for 2024 and prepare for 2025, like, do you really want to trade Bo Bichette? Do you really want to do that when, you know, he's on a down year? And I think a lot of it has to do with injury. So, I mean, you're not going to sell your house when the market's at the bottom. This would probably be close to the floor for Bo Bichette. You'd have to package it maybe in a way that gets creative, which I don't know if Toronto is in the market for, like, offsetting some of their costs. So, you know, like, does that mean Kevin Gausman becomes available? Or are you just trading, you know, future free agents at the end of this year? So, yeah, I mean, the obvious ones are Kikuchi, Danny Jansen, Justin Turner. I think Jansen brings in a significant return, but it's also, you know, a team's not going to use him as a primary catcher. So, like, it's just not. If you're going to go full rebuild, you're having to trade Vlad Guerrero. And I've constantly said this about Guerrero. Guerrero is a guy that you think you want to build your franchise around, but he's had one significant year where you can also point to. Listen, that was the season where they're playing three different minor league facilities, and how much of those numbers are repeatable. This year, he's been good, right? Like, he's had a really nice last 60 games, and that's something that I think you could see and go, okay, that's the Guerrero we like. That's the one without the dreads, right? Like, this is the version of Guerrero we've been waiting for. Well, how many teams are in the market for a first baseman? That's the thing. I think there's several, but are you willing to trade Vlad Guerrero to the Houston Astros? Are you willing to trade Guerrero to Seattle Mariners? Like, who are the teams that you're willing to trade to? And unfortunately, those are going to land on American League teams. So I don't know if there's any risk adversity here when it comes to what they're willing to do. I could tell you, because of parity this year, because if you look at standings and the amount of teams that are right around 500, if you can hold on for the next 2 weeks, I think there's going to be more teams in the market. It would be a seller's market because there's not a lot of teams that are blowing it up that you should be able to get a return. The problem is will you be able to land it? Will you be able to, if you are to trade the farm, if you are trading, you know, your assets, are you able to get the return that you need? You know, and you can point to a couple of examples of, like, you know, the Dalton Varsho deal in hindsight is not a great deal just because he lost a future catcher. So, like, Alejandro Kirk doesn't have a value anymore. David Jansen has value, but, you know, like, he's probably better off keeping Gabby Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel because of the power. So it's just, you got to thread the needle right now after Toronto. That's what it looks like for us.
Ryan, I wanted to ask you more about Bo Bichette. You kind of touched on his struggles this year and the fact that you know some of it at least has to do with injuries. It seems like he was held out of the D-back series to close out the first half. But, you know, hasn't homered since May 27th. We're seeing that there are so many issues with his swing right now, which is a swing that has brought him so much success. It covers so much of the plate. This is a guy that really, really loves, you know, ambushing mistakes early on in the count. Not a ton of success even doing that this season. And I'm wondering if, you know, in viewing him, say, in an every once in a while basis because you're doing so much, if you have seen anything that's different about Bichette's approach or mechanics at the plate that is different from, you know, years past when he had success.
So we love Bo Bichette, especially in Colorado because his dad, Dr. Right. Bichette. So we've been watching Bo for a long time. I will say, whenever a player is dealing with calf injury, back injury, any sort of leg ailment, the swing and the timing gets lost. And when you lose your timing, you lose power. So, I mean, I've seen Bo hit a bunch of balls hard, like the low liners that he's used to getting hit, that he hit right at people. That happens. That's baseball. That's just normal, right? Guerrero went through the same thing early in the season where exit velocity numbers were up, the launch angle was down, and then, you know, batting average bomb play was down. Those things even out if you continue to hit the ball hard, and then once you get locked in with timing, the exit, you know, exit velocity stays right around the same, but the launch angle increases to, like, that ideal spot. So I haven't seen Bichette be locked in timing-wise long enough where you're not tinkering or you're not, you know, mentally in the space of just getting frustrated, because that's what happens for baseball players. And, you know, it's day in, day out. You're trying to make these adjustments. You're not seeing results. Results are tied to your confidence. Confidence is down. And then you turn into this, like, this shell of yourself. So I think if he's healthy and is patient, all those numbers will eventually come, but this is going to be a year where, I mean, I guarantee you, Bo Bichette's long career, when it's all said and done, he's going to look back at 2024 and just go, wow, that year sucked. I'm glad that year is over.
Ryan, we appreciate you doing this for us. We'll let you scoot. Thank you for being generous with your time. Have a great call tonight, and hopefully we can chat soon.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
There he goes, Ryan Spielborg, SiriusXM MLB Network radio analyst, and you'll hear him with Alex Faust and Trisha Whitaker on tonight's broadcast of Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus. I'll say this, if you are interested, I think you can sign up for, like, trials of Apple TV Plus online. And I would probably recommend it if you're not into, like, if you don't have an Apple TV account already, because, I mean, if you have an iPhone, you do, but you can sign up for the trial because next Friday, which is the series opener at the Rogers Center against the Texas Rangers, is also an Apple TV Plus game. I'm not sure if it's Alex, Ryan, and Trisha on that call, but they have come to Toronto pretty often. But yeah. My point being is that it's next Friday is also an Apple TV Plus game. So just, you know, maybe a good time to sign up for the trial, I would say,
yeah,
which is free.
Like, is it a 7-day trial? Do you know?
It's a 2-month trial.
A 2-month trial?
I think, yeah.
So, you know, if you time it right, you could
get the whole rest of the season.
That's pretty good.
So we do appreciate Ryan for joining us. You know, before we get out of here and talk to Jason Beck from MLB.com, Tigers beat reporter for MLB.com, get the Tiger side of tonight's series opener at 11 o'clock. But you mentioned Bo, Jules.
Yes.
And I'll say this for Bo. Bo's had a bad season. I think he would admit it. He has been struggling. I'm sure it's tough to maintain confidence, even if you are like a highly competitive professional athlete. But I remember at the beginning of the season, one of the injuries he had was neck spasms. And as someone who has had neck spasms, it's like, that's tough. That's tough to, like, turn your head and much less play baseball.
Right.
So I can understand that. I'm sure injuries to a certain extent, not 100%, but to a certain extent probably do play a role in this.
I don't even know what neck spasms would entail.
You know
what I mean? And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. And when you look at his swing and how many moving parts there are to his swing and how much he does rely on getting the timing right. This is he's a free swing. He loves to swing.
He does.
He loves to swing the bat. And the reason why this swing has so many moving parts is because he wants to cover so much of the zone. And so it would make sense that if your body is down, you're not going to be able to have success.
We'll see if Bo is in the lineup tonight. He did not play pretty much the entire Diamondbacks series, so we'll see if he does go later on tonight. But you can watch it on Apple TV, Jays Tigers. You can listen to it right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're going to step aside, take a break. And on the other side, Jason Beck, Tigers beat writer and reporter for MLB.com, joins us. Jays Talk Plus returns after this on Sportsnet 360 and the vast Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus, hour two of the program here on Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360. Appreciate you all being alongside. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you until the top of the next hour. Second half of the season begins. I know it's not really like the second half. The Jays have played 96 games. They're going to play 66 games in the second half. But I know it's a colloquialism we use, Jules, but yeah. I still like using it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, right? That's the official wording. We're just going by the league here.
Exactly, yeah. We're just going along with the crowd on this one, right? Joining us right now to chat about the Tigers side of tonight's Blue Jays-Tigers matchup as the second half begins is Jason Beck from MLB.com. Jason, how are you? Thanks for doing this for us today.
Good. How are you guys?
We are great. We really appreciate it. And I mentioned it, but the second half does begin with Jays Tigers tonight at the Rogers Center here in Toronto. And the pitching matchup is a fun one. Jack Flaherty goes for Detroit. Chris Bassett will go for the Toronto Blue Jays. And I find the conversations, Jason, very interesting around Flaherty these days, because there's a real chance, like some Blue Jays certainly, that Flaherty is not a Tiger in, like, let's say, what, three starts from now, less than 2 weeks. You think that's still pretty likely? Because, you know, last we checked, the Tigers, not in a playoff spot, obviously, but still in one of their best spots heading into the All-Star break that they have been in a number of years. I mean, they were 8-2 in their last 10 games here before the break. So have they played their way out of being sellers, do you think?
I think they still have a ways to go on that front. I mean, winning 8 out of 10 going into the break, I mean, it was a huge step forward for these guys, but it still only got them to within 3 games of .500. So they're going to have to be able to carry this forward. And they have a, you know, pretty big opportunity to make up ground against some teams with this stretch. You know, what it means for Flaherty, Flaherty's an intriguing situation because when on the surface, it looks like he should be a pretty easy trade candidate. You know, they signed him to a one-year deal. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. You know, the Tigers have a good stockpile of young pitching to replace him. But two factors. One, he's pitched well enough to where you could reasonably think, now, they could make him a qualifying offer at the end of the season if they want to keep him or for the rest of the season. And then if he ends up signing elsewhere, you can get a comp pick in return in the draft. And this is a team that kind of prides itself the last couple of years on drafting fairly well. The second complicating factor is Flaherty's back. He's had two injections in the back since the start of June. And I think that creates a question mark for teams in terms of, okay, do we know this guy is going to be able to answer the bell when we need him? Or is he going to need another injection? How many more injections can he get on the back? Is this something that's going to be a concern down the stretch? So you could see where that could impact the interest in him. So I think he's lined up for three starts before the trade deadline. I think there are three big starts both for him and for the Tigers to show that he's healthy and to kind of figure out what his future is short and long term.
Jason, thanks for doing this. I wanted to ask you about sort of this wave of talent that we're seeing now with the Tigers coming into the majors. In you know, a lot of the team's success certainly recently goes through these guys, these rookies that are coming up, and right in the middle of it and probably leading the way right now is Riley Green. And this is a guy that obviously had Tommy John. We didn't necessarily know what to expect of him coming into the season. And then all of a sudden he's an all-star. He's putting up career numbers and putting the ball in the air, right? He's hitting for power quite consistently here. What have you seen from O'Reilly Green this season that has allowed him to, you know, put together these types of numbers so early in his journey?
So first and foremost, I think health has been a huge factor with Riley. You know, he's had the talent. I think the Tigers have long believed that, you know, he had the chance to be one of, if not their best hitter. It was just a matter of keeping him on the field and in the batter's box. You haven't been like chronic injuries. They've always been kind of these weird, like Tommy John for an outfielder is kind of, especially the way he did it, because he did it on the diving catch. So, you know, being on the field is huge for him. Plus, you know, he got with his hitting guys. He made some adjustments going into the season. While he was rehabbing from the Tommy John surgery, you know, made some adjustments to his swing so that he could get a little bit more lift on the ball, be more ready to, you know, kind of elevate. And it's really paid off. And what's impressed me about Riley this year, I think more than anything, is that he's done all this while being far and away the focal point of this offense. Basically all year, he's been the guy that teams have centered on in terms of don't let Riley Green beat you. And yet he's put up these numbers and he has beaten teams because he's just, he has an idea of how teams are trying to approach him. He's been selective at the plate. He's figured out the pitches he can do damage on. And, you know, with Torkelson down in AAA, with Kerry Carpenter hurt, there has not been a ton of, you know, reliable protection around him in the lineup, although Cole Keith has gotten better here in the last few weeks. So what Riley's done while taking on a very big role in this offense at an early age is really impressive.
We're chatting with Jason Beck, Tigers beat reporter for MLB.com here on Jays Talk Plus. Show and Julia here with you until the top of the hour. You know, I was reading, Jason, on MLB.com. I guess it was like things to look forward to in the second half from every team in baseball. And you wrote the blurb for the Tigers. And I was reading it earlier this morning how, you know, you're advocating for a lot of the younger guys to play a little bit more. Justin Henry Molloy, Wenzel Perez, Colt Keith, who you just mentioned. And I am curious, as we just discussed another young guy in Riley Green, and certainly they're going to play him as much as humanly possible. He was an all-star this year just a couple days ago. But, you know, when you look at guys like Colt Keith, when you look at guys like Molloy and Perez, I'm curious what you see, because I think, like, the sample sizes are pretty small, all things considered. So you obviously just want to see them play more so you know what they are at the major league level. But things look pretty promising for the Tigers for all three of those guys when it comes to growth at the major league level.
Yeah, and I think ultimately we'll see how their roles shake out. But I think a lot, they're a reminder that development for young hitters at the major league level is not linear. Yeah. You're going to have stops and starts. You're going to have struggles. And these guys, especially Colt Keith, struggled pretty deeply early in the year. But over the last 3 or 4 weeks, you've seen Colt start to figure things out, have a really good idea of how guys try to get him out, how to counteract that. And you're starting to see more of the Colt Keith we saw kind of rocket through the farm system last year and take on a big role in this lineup, to where, you know, if you had to identify a core moving forward in this lineup, I think, you know, Colt Keith and Riley Green are right in the middle of it. And it's been big for this offense in terms of being more consistent. It's been big for having a more productive middle of the order. Molloy struggled even deeper. Now, he hasn't been up all year. He just got called up in early June. And he came up with a reputation of being a very disciplined hitter at the plate. Well, I think part of the struggles was that, you know, honestly, the major league strike zone is a little bit different, we found out, than what these guys are used to in AAA, especially with the automatic balls and strikes at the AAA level. There was an adjustment, I think, in that aspect for Molloy. And also, he struggled on pitches in the zone that, you know, pitchers felt confident challenging him, especially with velocity and being able to beat him. He's gotten a better idea on how to be ready for pitches, how guys are sequencing him, and you're starting to see him do more damage when he hits the ball. He hits it hard. You know, there's a pretty productive power hitter there, a really nice combination of power and plate discipline. It's just a matter of unlocking it and getting him in a position where he's ready to hit every time. So that's huge. And Wenzel Perez kind of, you know, he had success early on, fell into a wall. You know, he's trying to get back to how he was, you know, in May. But you see the talent is there. There's a ton of athleticism. There's a speed factor I don't even think has been fully tapped into yet by this offense. And so, you know, those guys, you know, they deserve the playing time and they deserve these long looks. And that was part of the goal for this organization going in, was to give opportunities to young players, try to identify who fits into the core moving forward. And there's more on the way. We'll probably see your top catching prospect, Dylan Dingler, sometime after the deadline. Jace Young, their first-round pick from a couple of years ago, is knocking on the door. So, you know, there's more talent where that came from.
Yeah, Jason, and when you lay it all out like that, it does make sense that, you know, maybe this isn't the moment just yet for this team to make that that turn and start actually competing for a postseason spot and things of the sort. And another guy that, you know, we're talking about not linear development, a guy that still puzzles me a little bit from the outside looking in is Spencer Torkelson, right? He opened the season with the Tigers this year, couldn't really find his footing, got optioned in June. And it just seems like consistency has been really, really hard for him to find at the major league level.
Yeah, and you know, he ended up being optioned to Toledo in early June. And even there, it's been a rough go. He had some success the first week or two, and since then, it's been in stops and starts. I talked with him, you know, a week or two ago, and, you know, he talked about, like, he'll feel things clicking in for a game or two, and then he'll fall out of it, and then he'll fall back in. He's trying to get that consistency. You know, it's the numbers don't look great right now. I do think he'll get back up here. I do think there's a productive hitter there. You don't put up the types of numbers he did not only in college and in the minors, but even up here in Detroit last year without having, you know, a productive swing and the ability to do damage. It's, you know, now the challenge is how do you unlock that and how do you not only get him back to where he was last year, I think they want to go beyond that and find a little bit more disciplined hitter who can tap into that power without so much swing and miss. And it's a challenge. And sometimes you have to hit rock bottom before you turn it around. In the case of some hitters, I think that's kind of what we're seeing with Torque right now.
Jason, before we let you go, we appreciate you being generous with your time. I actually can't believe the last question I'm about to ask you is about the guy I'm the most interested in with the Detroit Tigers, and it's, oh, just some guy named Tarik Skubal. And he has just been so much fun to watch. He was pretty good at the All-Star game. And, I mean, I think you could probably have made it a pretty compelling argument that he should have been the AL starter over Corbin Burnes. I would have bought into that argument. Absolutely. I mean, this is a guy. I haven't actually checked the odds since the first half ended, but he was near the top of the odds when it comes to favorites or near favorites for winning the American League Cy Young. Like, this is the kind of pitcher we're talking about this season. Now, Skubal not going to pitch against the Blue Jays in this series, as far as I can tell. Flaherty, Olson, Montero is how things line up Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But even so, when you look at the season Skubal has had, even in the last couple of years, because he's had some pretty gnarly injuries, took some time to come back from the injury, but once he did, he has been lights out. And I'm curious what you see, because you get to see him on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, he is honestly the best pitcher I've covered here probably since Verlander.
Wow.
He's been that good, both in terms of pure pitching, pitching on-field dominance, off-field presence, work ethic, you know, kind of that never-ending drive to get back. Now, there's been good guys along the way. You know, Matthew Boyd, a former Jays prospect,
sure,
you know, had a couple really good seasons here. But in terms of, like, the overall package, you know, Tarik has got it. He is a bona fide number one starter. And it's funny to think about because, like, when the Tigers were stockpiling pitching prospects, you know, from, like, you know, 2016 through 2019, 2020, like, he wasn't one of those top guys. He was a ninth-round draft pick. You know, Casey Mize was supposed to be a guy. Matt Manning was supposed to be a guy, you know, Alex Faedo, guys like that. And lo and behold, you know, Tarek is the guy who came through and who came out of some of these tough situations, like you said, and really learned from them. He put his, you know, downtime while rehabbing from the flexor tendon surgery to good use by developing a changeup, and it's really paid off. It's been a wipeout pitch for him, an equalizer against right-handed hitters, and it's really taken him to another level. And so, like, as long as he's healthy, you know, he is one of, if not the best pitcher in the American League right now.
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about Scooble terrorizing the rest of the AL for probably a long time, I'm guessing. And Jason Beck gets to cover it for MLB.com down in Detroit at Comerica Park today. The series gets going at the Rogers Center between the Jays and the Tigers. Jason, appreciate you doing this for us. Thanks for catching up with us, carving out some time. Have a great series, and we'll chat soon.
Sounds good. Have a good weekend.
You too. There he goes. Jason Beck, Tigers beat reporter for MLB.com. I actually forgot it was Friday. He said, you have a good weekend. I'm like, what is he talking about? Oh, yeah. Today is the end of the week.
I can tell you he'll probably have a great series because he's off.
Yes.
And I'm there covering the Tigers.
There you go.
So, yeah, definitely. Definitely have a great series, Jason, and get some rest. You deserve it.
He does. He definitely does. Before we go, because we just did a whole deep dive on the Tigers, I did want to get this in here for you, Jules, before we take a quick break here. You know, I was talking about with Jesse Rubinoff on Jays Talk Classic, as I like to. I feel like I have to make that distinction on this show in particular, right? Because we're on Jays Talk Plus. So Jays Talk Classic, the regular Jays Talk, Blair and Mark are doing it tonight. I will be doing it solo, I believe, on Saturday and with Nick Ashbourne on Sunday. So that'll be fun down at the Rogers Center. But one of the things we talk about often with the deadline approaching is post-trade deadline. When it comes to a team that, I mean, I think we largely agree that barring some like really unprecedented turnaround is probably not going to make the playoffs. So just note with that in the back of your mind, post deadline discussions, I always find really interesting because I mean, like if, you know, it's probably going to be a little bit of, you should have traded for this guy or you should have traded away another guy, depending on who they do or do not trade, who's a Blue Jay, who's not after the deadline, the contract extensions, if Vladdy and Bo are still here, those are going to be things we talk about after the deadline. But I think one of the more intriguing post deadline conversations I'm looking forward to having on a regular basis is Joey Votto and what Joey Votto is doing at the major league level. Now, if you remember, he was playing for the Dunedin Blue Jays down in Florida, which is like the lowest level for him to get back in action. He had some setbacks. I think he was sick. He had another injury after the stepping on the bat in spring training in the dugout after he hit a home run, which was like a wild roller coaster. Cause I was doing that game and I remember thinking like, this is awesome. Like we're going to be talking about Joey Votto in a couple of weeks. And then he like, we like didn't see him again for
was
like
the first pitch,
I forget if it was Zach Wheeler or Aaron Nola, but they were playing the Phillies and it was one of their like top guys and he just jacks his home run and you're like, wow, Joey Votto does still bang. And then we didn't see Joey Votto again. He like was I was convinced he wasn't even real for the next couple of months. The Buffalo Bisons, right before we talked to Jason, I'm just going to read you the tweet, okay? They just tweeted this. Welcome to the herd, Joey Votto. Six-time All-Star Joey Votto is scheduled to make his herd debut tonight as the Bisons host the Rail Riders at 7:05 p.m. Eastern. So there you go. So Joey Votto has made his graduation to the highest level of the minor leagues, playing for AAA Buffalo. So I gotta think, Jules. I admit I was under the impression, or I was hoping perhaps that he would have made it back up for the Blue Jays by Canada Day and have all the crowd at the Rogers Center cheering for him. That did not happen, but he is going to play for the Bisons tonight, which would suggest, if all goes well, that he is not that far from playing for the Blue Jays if they really want him to, and I got to think that will happen at some point.
What is it that we say about top prospects? One step away, one level away, and that is Joey Votto, and I agree with you. I think that it's going to be a big storyline moving forward if he can stay healthy and if we actually see him play and get a little bit more consistency here. Didn't do tremendously well in Dunedin. The numbers don't jump off the page at all. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that this is a guy with 17 major league seasons under his belt. So much history there. And a Toronto guy, right?
Sure.
And so if things did not go right for the Blue Jays this year, then why not get in a little bit of a feel-good story, and also a guy that has so much experience and so much veteran leadership about him that can actually, you know, help that this clubhouse endure maybe a little bit of the disappointment here. And I'm sure that the AAA guys also will have a ton to learn from a guy like Joey Votto, who honestly, you know, he's very, very generous with his time. He is a very thoughtful guy to talk to. And I can only imagine that that also carries over to teammates as well. And so, you know, it is exciting, Joe. And it's okay to be excited about this.
Yeah, I think so, too. Like, does it mean that it's a signpost that the season has not gone according to plan? Probably, probably to a certain extent. But at the same time, I do think it's kind of a fun story. And it's something, I mean, I know for a fact, because I feel like every time I've done Jays Talk, every time Blair's done Jays Talk for the past, honestly, the entire season, we've gotten one caller text that has been, hey, what's the latest with Votto? What's going on with Votto? He's a very popular baseball player, and triply so, I think, in Canada, quadruply so in Toronto specifically. So I am looking forward to seeing what goes on there. And I think the other half of this equation is, I remember when Justin Turner signed here, one of the big part of the conversation, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, a big part of the conversation was, what kind of veteran leadership does Justin Turner bring in the clubhouse? And I remember when Turner talked to Blair on the pod, it was before Blair returned full-time because it was in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the part of that conversation was about how Turner is not, by all reports from Boston, from Los Angeles, was that Turner is not the kind of guy who needs to stand on a soapbox and yell to the clubhouse to get people's attention. Like, he's not the kind of guy who goes and grabs guys by the scruff of their neck to make sure they're doing things the quote-unquote right way. Like, that's a part of his veteran leadership. And I think it wasn't just the production they were hoping to get from JT. It was also that aspect of him being a player as a vet for a team that did not have a lot of those players, right? So if you do trade away the deadline, Danny Jansen, who is the longest tenured Blue Jay now, if you do trade away Justin Turner to a contender, if you are trading away, I mean, it's different for pitchers, I suppose, but if you do trade away Kikuchi and Richards, and you're looking at a team that has, I don't want to say a lack of leadership, but maybe a lack of veterans on the team outside of, let's say, George Springer, essentially.
Yeah, I'd put Kevin Kiermaier in that.
Kevin Kiermaier, that's right.
Well.
Kiermaier might not be a Blue Jay, and he would certainly fit that bill. So if you're not having those guys on your team, then I think Joey Votto could like, beyond his production on the field, which I can't imagine you're really crossing your fingers to see him hit like 25 home runs in 66 games.
Yeah.
Like, what I think you're hoping for in addition is to see what kind of leadership he brings within that clubhouse.
Yeah, we speak a lot about clubhouse culture, show. The Blue Jays put a lot of emphasis in that as well, and rightfully so, because you can really see the difference between good culture and bad culture. Yeah. And how that translates and just, you know, into the discipline and the ability to get off of slumps and all of that. Culture does play a part in it. And this is a guy that has done it for such a long time. Yeah. And there's a reason why he stayed with the Reds for as long as he did beyond the on-field production. So it does kind of bode well for the Blue Jays. If things go completely awry here and they get Joey Votto in, well, guess what? That is going to do something. That is going to give you a little bit of a jolt. And this is also a guy that can still swing the bat, right? When he's still building up. This has been such a weird season for him. And it's kind of a nutshell of what the Blue Jays season maybe has been. So many setbacks and so many issues. But you're right. He's popular for a reason. And if he can give you a little bit of on-field production as well as you know, that presence for the guys that are going to stay in that clubhouse, in a clubhouse that is most certainly going to get younger after the deadline, then you kind of call it a success for what it is. But long way to go until there, show. It's not even guaranteed that he will actually play for the Blue Jays.
That's true. Yeah.
Although it would be a pretty, you know, a storybook ending, if you will, to this career.
Joey Votto suiting up for the Buffalo Bisons at Salem Field tonight. So that sounds pretty exciting. So we'll certainly keep an eye on that this weekend and into the going weeks, the coming weeks of the second half of the season as that begins tonight. Again, if you want to watch Blue Jays Tigers, it's on Apple TV's Friday Night Baseball. If you want to listen to it, Ben Shulman, Ben Nicholson Smith have the call. 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. Blair and Barker have Jays Talk Classic post game. Let's take a quick break here, Jules. And when we come back, I want to solicit some texts, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It's always open. You can certainly text us there whenever you want. Standard data and messaging rates do apply. But second half bold predictions await us on the other side. Maybe we'll take a look at the schedule as well. The 2025 schedule was released, I think it was yesterday. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But definitely get into these second half bold predictions. I think I might have to cook up a Joey Votto bold prediction in the break here. I think we can maybe get to that, certainly. But we'll take your bold predictions and get to some of our own on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network and watching on Sportsnet 360.
teeing up the biggest games of the night. It's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to JSTOP Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also on Sportsnet 360 on television. Thanks for being with us. Final segment with Show and Julia this, not just today, but this whole week. Blake does return Jules on Monday. So I hope Blake is ready and rested to talk about Joey Votto for the next 66. I guess, Blake, by the time he comes back, there will be 63 more games. So hope Blake is ready for some hot Joey Votto content for the rest of the year. I'm sure he is. He always is ready. He stays ready.
I'm sure he has Murphy. A spreadsheet going
yes,
already.
Yes, I'm sure. You know what? I'm sure he made it in the spring training. He did. Like, that's the God's honest truth. It's 100% what he did. But that's why we love Blake. So he will be back on Monday. We want to do bold predictions, Jules. So you want to text us 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. Standard data and messaging rates may apply if you do choose to text us. But I see some here already. We'll get to those in a sec. But first, I did want to revisit some bold predictions that we made, you and I made, at the beginning of the year. So what had happened, and you can actually go back and find this episode. It's pretty easy to find. I think it was just called Bold Predictions for the Blue Jays season on the Jays Talk podcast feed. And I got you to make some bold predictions. I made some. Nick Ashbourne made some. Blair made some. Blake did. Ben Nicholson-Smith did. Like, a lot of the people whose voices you hear on the Jays Talk postgame show, including you and I, we got to make those bold predictions. So I'll say this. The season that has been, the season, the half season that was, I don't think has necessarily gone really well for, I will say, literally anyone's bold predictions. Blair's bold predictions, mine, Nick's, Blake's, yours. I don't think anyone was particularly close. So why don't you regale us with your first half bold predictions, and we'll see how close we were. I think you had three.
Yes. So my first one was the Blue Jays will get to the second half with a 44-52 record.
You lie. You lie like a rug.
Yes. No, that is a lie. So my three, I actually pulled up my notes.
Okay.
My notes app. So number one was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will hit 20 or more homers in the first half of the season.
I mean, it's not terrible.
Wah, wah. No, I mean, it is. It is. I mean, I will say that I looked really smart during that Tampa series.
Yeah.
And then yeah.
14 home runs for Vladdy.
He has 14. So a ways away. Number two was Bo Bichette will play 162 games, which is laughable now, right? That's tough because obviously he's a guy that prides himself in being on the field every day and putting in the work and being that type of consistent contributor. Really unfortunate with the injuries that he's had and the fact that, couldn't really find his rhythm here. I still believe that he has it in him to do it at some point in his career. We kind of know that it's kind of a goal since Marcus Semien was here and they developed that sort of mentorship relationship.
Yeah.
I believe that this is something that Bo can and will achieve at some point. Just wasn't this year. It happens. And the third one was lightning speed proving me wrong. It was just immediate, which was Yariel Rodriguez will break camp with the Blue Jays in the major league level, which also didn't happen. Yes, it happened, shortly after, and we are seeing, kind of a success story here with Yariel early on in his Blue Jays tenure, but the Blue Jays were cautious and held him back a little bit and immediately proved me wrong.
Yeah, because I guess he did have, I think at the time we made the bold predictions, Weyrod ran into the back spasm thing and that just immediately put a kibosh. I want to say spasms issue for him ran up, like we might have just done the bold predictions. Like I think like you'd, because we recorded them because you were down in Dunedin and I was here. So I remember we did it over the phone and I think like it might have been like later that day or like the next day that he had the back spasm. So you're right. That might be the quickest a bold prediction has ever been disproven, unfortunately. But I think they're the ones who are pretty, like they're bold, but like reasonably bold because Vladdy, 20 home runs in the first half. I know 14 is like it's not 20, but it's not like he hit like three home runs in the first half, right? He's still he heated up late, including a home run in the last game before the All-Star break. And Bo again, like I think you had to be bold there because if you had said like, oh, Bo's going to play 160 games, that's pretty much what he had done, right? Like that's exactly along the lines. So you pretty much had to go every game, and then of course unfortunately, injuries played their toll, took their toll. Mine were no closer. I'll say this: like I had a George Springer hits. I think it was 30 plus bombs. That's almost certainly not going to happen. Vladdy hits 40 plus bombs. I mean, I guess it could happen, but
I guess it
seems unlikely. If he's at 14 now, and there's 66 more games to play, so what is that? 26 more home runs he has to hit in the second half. I'm going to say that's probably not going to happen. Yeah. Even though I would like to be right on that one. I said Bo would be top five in MVP voting. Ooh, that's definitely not happening. And actually, this one was less of a statistical one. I said Kikuchi would sign an in-season contract extension.
Interesting.
I mean, now we're having the conversation about Kikuchi is that he will not be a Blue Jay. So that's definitely not going to happen. But I think it revolved around guys I was really looking forward to watching. Funnily enough, with Nick Ashbourne, one of the joke ones I did, I should have locked this one down because I can't take credit for it if it happens because I didn't, but I joked that IKF would hit double-digit home runs, which he's never done before, and he has 7 home runs right now, albeit on the IL. So it's funny because I kind of jokingly said it, and I feel like he almost certainly will get to 10 or 11 home runs this year. He's been that good. So if he does get there,
no, we'll give the win.
I don't think I can take credit for it. I don't think I can.
Well, I mean, you have credit for it in my eyes because that is a bold prediction, especially, you know, it wasn't even guaranteed that he would be an everyday player. Yeah, let's be honest.
It's true. It was no guarantee.
It was the type of signing that, you know, you hoped for the best. And for once this season, the Blue Jays did get the best. IKF has been pretty consistent, pretty steady, and clutch at times as well. So I think that's a bold prediction, and I think that is a win for show.
All right, I'll take like half a win. I'll mark down
point five. I'll take the other half.
All right, sure, if you want. No one else is going to take it. So, okay, let's do our second half bold predictions here. You want to start? Yeah. How many did you write down? How many?
I have two.
Yeah, two. Okay, I got three. Actually, you know what? I have four now because I made up a Joey Votto one, but I had three initially.
Okay, so give me one then, and I'll give you one.
All right, so Spencer Horwitz enters play, I guess, tonight with a batting average of 324, which is pretty incredible for a guy who spent the majority of the season prior to being called up in AAA. And this is a guy who hit 330 for basically last year and this year for Buffalo in the minors. And we did see Spencer Horwitz for about a cup of coffee last year. He hit his first major league home run, albeit at Coors Field, which is like, I don't know, it's like playing baseball on the moon, essentially, right? So I'm not discrediting it, but I mean, you wanted to see it happen elsewhere, and he has hit a bunch of home runs elsewhere since then, so that's obviously very fun. But I'm gonna say simply this, that he does not have a significant fall off for the rest of the season. So actually, I think I had made this bold prediction before they had adjusted his batting average to 324, because I guess it went down a little. It was at 330 going into the final game in Arizona before the All-Star break. So my bold prediction was simply that he would be at or around 325 for the rest of the season. Okay. So I'm basically saying Horwitz will not, like, even if pitchers try and adjust to him, he will not have a dramatic decrease in play. And in fact, he will stay above 300 for the rest of the year.
That is kind of bold, but I can also see the reasoning behind it,
right?
Because this is not simply a guy that is relying on power or whatever it may be. Horwitz is unique and special in that his ability to control the strike zone is pretty awesome. It's pretty up there. And, you know, you kind of watch his at-bats and he will go on little runs of just fouling off 4 or 5 straight pitches and really staying locked in and adjusting his swing accordingly, according to the count, according to the pitcher that he's facing. We have seen that adaptability, and obviously it's from here to there, it's a long way, and it is a back and forth type of thing when it comes to pitchers and hitters, but I see the foundation for that bold prediction, Joe. So I like it. I get behind it.
What's your first bold prediction?
So my first one is Danny Jansen will still be a Blue Jay after the trade deadline.
You know what? That is very bold.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. I like setting myself up for failure. I really do. But here's the thing. Danny Jansen is so valued internally within this organization. We all know it. We've all heard, what is spoken of him and his presence in the longest tenured Blue Jay.
Yep.
These things matter. They do. That's number one. I believe that the Blue Jays should put an emphasis on extending Danny Jansen. He could be part of this team for a long time moving forward. And number two, I honestly don't think that necessarily the Blue Jays are going to get the type of return package that they would hope for or expect or want out of Danny Jansen, because around the league, the consensus is he's not an everyday catcher, and that makes sense. He's, you know, he's a great blocker for sure. He can get guys trying to steal. Something that he doesn't do particularly well is framing. So running into so many injuries and bad luck at that, but kind of keeping him off the field for extended periods of time. There are cases to be made there that maybe the Blue Jays are not going to get exactly what they want out of a Danny Jansen trade. So this is definitely bold, because at this point it does seem like the Blue Jays are going to sell hard on their unrestricted free agents.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were talking at the end of the season about this guy signing an extension and sticking around and how much and how valuable he is to the organization. So if there's one UFA that I think the Blue Jays are going to try to retain, it is Danny Jansen.
And to your point, I mean, there's not a lot of catching depth outside of Kirk and Jano.
Like,
I mean,
exactly. Is you Kirk have Brian Servin, and then what,
right? I mean, yeah. Is Kirk an everyday catcher?
No.
At this point, probably not, I would agree. So if that's the case, do you want to have Kirk catch, like, I don't know, like 6 of every 7 games in a 7-day week kind of thing? Probably not, right?
His offensive numbers, obviously, we know, dip significantly when he doesn't have those days off in between. And so there's a ton to consider there, not just for now, but for the later as well. So, you know, are the odds of this happening super high? No, but that's why it's a bold prediction.
That's why, yeah, we're on the highway to the danger zone right now, Jules. I have one on Davis Schneider.
Tell me.
All right, so Davis Schneider right now, entering the second half, batting average .217, he has hit 10 home runs, he's an OPS of .703. We're approaching, I guess, a full year in the majors for Davis Schneider, but those are his stats from this year, obviously. But my prediction is that he'll turn it around. So last year, he finished, obviously in fewer games, but he finished with a batting average of .276 and an OPS of over 1,000, started with 1. I think it was 1,000.008, right? So I'm thinking that the bold prediction will be that Davis Schneider will finish in the last 66 games. He will raise his batting average from .217 to at least .250 by the end of the season. And will, I don't know if he'll get an OPS of over 1,000, but I think he will get an OPS of well above 800 for the rest of the year. That's my bold prediction. I think basically Davis Schneider does not have a miserable second half. He has a very good second half, because he seems, I don't know, he seems to have been, I don't want to say figured out, mm-hmm. but he does still struggle with the high fastball.
Yes.
And I think it's now a matter of seeing, can he readjust again? Because he did seemingly do it at the start of the year, became a full-time player, as he deserved to be, mm-hmm. and has had a bit of a fall-off statistically, production-wise. So I think that turns around here in the second half.
Yeah, and sometimes the break can help with that.
Sure,
right,
yeah.
Show? You get a couple of days away from things and clear your head, and then that allows you to go back, look at your swing, bounce ideas off of coaches, and not just inside the organization, but, you know, bounce ideas off of coaches that you have in your corner.
Yeah.
And it's not unheard of that guys are going to come back out of the break and look a little bit better than they did right before. So I can certainly respect that. I don't buy into that one.
Oh, okay.
But I respect
So it's too bold is what you're saying. It's too bold.
I think so. However, this is what we're here for. So, and I like that it's, you know, it's an optimistic one. It's because it would be hard to have a negative prediction.
You know what? You can do that. If you want to text in with a negative one, like, you absolutely can. I mean, there's no rule that says bold predictions have to be positive.
Yeah.
I just think it's more fun, because you're basically hoping that it's a, you know, when I'm not a huge gambler, but if you're betting, I never bet the unders. Betting the under is boring.
Betting
the over is way more fun. Yeah. And if you don't get there, then because you're cheering for more, you're cheering for like more things to happen, right? You're not cheering like, oh yeah, strikeout, right? Like you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. I've never been a fan of doing that. So I'm a big, just personality wise, I think I'm a big glass half full person. I know your second bowl prediction doesn't have to do with wins.
Yes.
Wins and losses. So you're a good person to ask this question to. So I was thinking about this the other day when it comes to wins and losses, win totals, which is a fun thing to do preseason wise. Like, what will the over under on win totals be for the Blue Jays? So they're 44-52 in 96 games. There's 66 games left, as we have said a couple times. So if they want to get to 89 wins from last year, they have to go 45-21 the rest of the way, which is a winning percentage of 681, and 44-52, by the way, is a winning percentage of 458. So if things don't get any worse, but things don't get any better, and they win at a 458 winning percentage for the rest of the season, that would leave you with a 74, I think approximately, it's like 74.1, but it's like 74 wins on the season. So it would lead me to believe, Jules, that anything above 74 wins, in like based on what we've seen from the first half, would in theory be bold.
Right.
So are you going above 74 wins for the rest of the year, like total for the Blue Jays?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm really, really setting myself up to just be dragged online. But here's the prediction, the bold prediction. Blue Jays will actually finish the season with a winning record. Are they going to match their total from last year? No, they are not. They would have to go 38-28 to just eke out a winning season here, and that's a 575 winning percentage. You know, it's stranger things have happened. That's what I'll say.
Have they?
No.
I don't know.
I mean, we're here sitting together. That's pretty strange, too. But I believe that after, you know, the UFAs have been dealt or whatever it is, the moves have been made, everything is said and done, you bring in some new blood into this clubhouse, and that usually gives teams a little bit of a jolt. It's nothing is guaranteed, I will say that, and the Blue Jays are not where we expected them to be by any means, but you've seen it happen. When you bring up, we saw it last year with the Blue Jays,
sure.
Right? The Buffalo Boys or whatever it is, when they came up, that is exactly what they provided for the Blue Jays. It was very much a shot in the arm, and let's finish this season strong. So I believe that once everything is said and done, the dust settles, then the Blue Jays should be in a little bit of a better position to play more freely, and maybe we'll see a little bit more inspiring baseball than so far. So the Blue Jays will finish the season with a winning record, period.
So it could be. So you're not necessarily saying they have to finish with 82 wins. They can, in theory, finish with more than 82 wins.
Yes.
But you're a minimum of 82 wins. All right. You know what? I think that's actually incredibly bold, based on what we've seen for the team.
Yeah.
I think in a vacuum, to say Team X, Y, or Z will finish with a winning record, it's not bold.
Yeah.
But to say that the Blue Jays will, based on what
this
we've seen,
this
2024 Blue Jays, I actually do think that's very bold. So good for you. I think that's actually the boldest one we've had so far.
Well, let's hear it. Beat me now, please.
You tell me if this is bold. I'll go right to the Joey Votto one. So I'm just.
Oh,
by the way,
nice.
This is my computer today. Thanks, CloudStrike. This is my computer. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Sho's just holding his phone up, and I'm like, am I boring you? Are you checking your text?
I don't want you to think I'm not paying attention. I'm just looking at Joey Votto's stats here. So in 65 games played for the Reds last year, he did not play a lot for the Reds last year because he was injured, right? He was coming off the injury. Then he played most of the second half. He had, I think his like WAR was like minus 0.1 or something. It was almost zero exactly. But in 65 games, he hit... Let's see, I believe he hit 14 home runs. He had 208 ABs, and he had 42 hits, and that is in 242 plate appearances, okay? So that's in 65 games. He's playing for the Bisons tonight. So let's just assume, let's be generous and assume things go really well for him. He plays a week for the Bisons.
Okay.
Let's just say, if he gets called up like the day after the trade deadline, right?
Okay.
He gets called up on July 31st, or he gets called up on August 1st, let's say. So I'm going to... napkin math it and say he plays, let's say, 55 games for the Blue Jays this year, right? He plays 55 games post-deadline, roughly. Never do math on the air. It's a losing proposition. But I'm going to say that he matches those numbers. In 55 games, he did this in 65 games last year. I'm going to say he hit 14 home runs last year. I'm going to say he hits 15 home runs in 55 games for the Blue Jays this season. That's my bold prediction. Is that too bold or is that not bold enough?
I mean it. The bold prediction is Joey Votto will play for the Blue Jays. That is stratospherically bold, but I love it.
Right.
It's definitely, if he makes it to the majors, then I will be watching every at bat and thinking of you And I root for your success. I really do. Because it would be so fun to watch that happen. And speaking of, you know, a shot in the arm, a jolt of energy and whatnot, if that does happen, then maybe even my bold prediction has a little bit more of a chance to come true.
That's true, actually. You know what? That's actually true. If Joey Votto plays well, there's probably a better than, it's a non-zero chance the Blue Jays get to a winning record if Votto and everyone else plays well. That's actually pretty true. Let's get to the text line. 590-590. Name and location. Read some of the listeners' texts. I see here one from Pete in PEI. Pete says, I actually like this one. It's not a Blue Jays bold prediction, but I do like this one because I actually think this is very bold.
Yeah.
So Pete says, bold prediction, due to multiple injuries, Kevin Biggio plays a pivotal role in a Dodgers championship run. I'm fine with moving him, but doesn't mean I don't love the guy. I have seen that sentiment very often. Like, I think a lot of Kevin Biggio, for a variety of reasons, really did endear himself to a lot of fans. And I will say, when he got DFA'd, it was a shocker to me. I did not expect that to happen. We know now, in part, because he refused to accept the, what is it, the demotion to the Buffalo Bisons. And then he ended up getting DFA'd as a result, then elected free agent. Or I guess he got traded before he elected free agency to the Dodgers. So I think that's very bold. I think it's bold because Biggio has not had, like, it's not like he's rediscovered his swing or something in Los Angeles. He hasn't played a ton. He's not played that much better than, like, Chris Taylor, for example, or the guys he had to beat in order to find a significant staying point on the Dodgers roster. But I do like that. That is bold because, first of all, it means the Dodgers have to win the World Series, and they're down bad right now when it comes to the starting rotation. And then, two, they haven't been getting any contributions out of, like, pretty much anyone not in their top four or five, right? Like, I know Mookie Betts had the fractured hand, but, like, Betts, Freeman, Shohei, Will Smith, Teoscar Hernandez, they have not gotten pretty much any production out of anyone else. So it's a very bold prediction from Pete and PEI.
Yeah, looking at, just pulled up his baseball reference page here for Biggio. He's gone 7-for-40 with the Dodgers, which is a 175 batting average. And his only extra base hit was a home run, right? So that would be extremely bold. We have seen Biggio be clutch in the past. He does have that to his abilities, but to do it consistently over the course of a long playoff run, that does sound pretty bold to me.
Let's get one more in here. Clifton in Etobicoke. Always fun hearing from Clifton. Hope you're doing well, man. Clifton says, bold prediction. I actually think this is very wild too, and you'll like this one because you said this yesterday.
Okay.
Tonight's opponent, the Tigers, will be a wild card team. Yeah. That's really interesting because it's a conversation we've had a lot over the last little bit. Like, if you're not in the wild card race if you're not one of the three wild card teams right now, which I believe, without looking, I think it's the Yankees, Twins, Red Sox, I think in order. And then you got the Royals are two games out, I believe. So then after that, there's the Rays. There are certainly the Tigers. There are the Astros and the Rangers as well. Like, you're not only jumping the teams in your own division, you have to jump, like, and the teams that are in wild cards 1-3, you have to jump all those other teams as well.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, it's not, your destiny is not entirely in your own hands. But that, I think that for that reason, Clifton's prediction is bold because, like we talked about with Jason Beck, there's a lot of winning the Tigers have to do and beat common opponents, beat the rest of the guys in their division, and then jump the Rays and the Rangers and the Astros as well.
All while developing so much young talent and waiting for the next wave to sort of come up, which we'll certainly see in September and all of that. But who would have thought, Joe, that, you know, at this point we would be talking about the Blue Jays having a winning record as a bold prediction? And then you look at the Tigers, it's like, they'll probably finish with a win. Like, it's possible.
It's possible.
They're three games out right now of 500, and, you know, if they can keep playing like they did to close out the first half, then they'll probably have a winning record. Are they a playoff team? Not this season, I don't believe, but it's coming. And that's exciting because obviously the Tigers are such a storied franchise. We kind of want to and expect to see them be good. So, yeah, exciting times ahead. It's always fun for me, Sho, when these teams kind of come out of those long rebuilds and you can see the talent actually translate into the major league field. That's pretty cool. I'm excited about the Tigers.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be fun to watch. Teams that have the youth movement going on, I think, are fun to watch. And that was the Jays not so long ago, right? And I mean, I think it's going to be exciting in the second half because there are, and I know that sounds trite, but I say that because trades are going to happen, movements are going to happen. Maybe we see a Gabriel Cancel. Maybe we see a Riley Tirota at some point. Maybe Addison Barger comes back up and rakes. Like, there are, maybe Joey Votto, he can still bang, maybe.
The
we'll
youth
see.
Movement.
Yeah, the youth movement, led by Joey Votto. Yeah. Hey, look, Jules, we're out of here, but this was a lot of fun. We were in all week.
Yeah.
I will see you tomorrow for the Blue Jays pregame show, but this was fun.
It was fun, and we really appreciate everyone that tunes in and sends texts. I know we're no Blake Murphy.
Sure,
we're not trying to be, but this was so much fun, and I appreciate this time, show. Thank you.
I do too. Yeah, thank you. Jules is the best. You can find her on Twitter, @JuliaCKreutz, K-R-E-U-Z, on Twitter. If you want to listen to the radio broadcast of tonight's game, Ben Shulman, Ben Nicholson-Smith have it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, starting at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. Blair and Barker with Chase Talk afterwards. For Julia Kreutz, I'm Sho. Thanks to Jen. Thanks to Amit. Thanks to Austin. Thanks to you for listening and watching. We'll talk to you later.